You're listening to 103.1 FM and 980 AM WPFP Park Falls. This is Trail Mix 103.1.
This week on Viewpoints.
We're living in an era of partisanship and a political partisanship that is more divisive than anything anybody in any living generation has seen before.
Why are young men and women so deeply divided? Then,
I haven't received a death threat in a few months, but I still, I get ugly messages.
We speak to a librarian caught in the crossfire of book censorship. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
$5,000. That's the average amount of money people in the U.S. are now spending on gas in a year. $5,000. That's crazy. If you drive, you have to download Upside, the free app that gives you cash back every time you get gas. That's right. You can earn real cash back with Upside just by buying the gas you're already buying. You can literally start earning cash back today.
I use Upside every time I fill up, and I've already made around $200, $300.
You're putting gas in your car anyway. Why not get real cash back? If you like free money, download Upside.
I'm saving the cash I earn from using Upside to help pay for a vacation later this year.
Download the free Upside app now to earn cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code OWN to get an extra 25 cents per gallon on your first tank. You can cash out anytime right to your bank, PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code OWN for a 25 cents per gallon bonus on your first tank. That's code OWN for a 25 cents per gallon bonus.
In September, NBC News released a poll with surprising results. Gen Z has the biggest gender gap of any generation. But what does this really mean? In politics, social issues, and even measures of success, Gen Z men and women are further apart than any other age group. If you look back at the last presidential election, 61% of women ages 18 to 29 voted for Vice President Kamala Harris, while only 47% of Gen Z men did the same. For Corey C. Miller, a Gen Z researcher and professor of leadership studies at Wright State University, these numbers aren't surprising.
From an ideological perspective, Gen Z women skew much more to the left than Gen Z men. We found in our study that 46.8% of women, Gen Z women, lean left, whereas only 25.75% of Gen Z men lean left. Now you flip it around the other way, and you have 21.26% of Gen Z women lean right, whereas 37.86% of Gen Z men lean right. Everybody else is sort of situated in the middle. You look at Gen Z women, 28.36% in the middle, and you look at Gen Z men, and that is 29.35% in the middle. So they both have something relatively similar in the middle, but where they really differ are on those kinds of bookends.
And these ideological differences go past politics. In four studies that took place between 2014 and 2021, Seemiller found that Gen Z men and women often care about very different social issues.
How does it show up in terms of what they care about? Well, it's interesting because they do have some things that sort of cross over in some ways and then other things that are not at all similar. We've found that some of the things that continue to hold very strongly for Gen Z men are things around the cost of higher education. That's come up a couple times. The environment has come up. Things around technology, limitations on personal freedom, not being able to kind of either express themselves. This can include things like being able to carry a weapon. It also includes things like being able to be free from having their bank accounts hacked, those kinds of things. And then they also care a lot about unemployment, economy, getting a job. So really the kinds of things that sort of cluster towards the top have to do with money, the cost of higher education, the infringement upon personal freedoms, and then things around employment and the economy.
Interestingly, women are more likely to prioritize human rights and social justice over economic issues.
Women, on the other hand, the things that continue to come up for them are really, really situated around the environment and we would call them like kind of, you know, social justice issues, things like racism, sexism, immigration, human rights, equality. They do have a couple notes on things like financial security and cost of higher education. But again, I think that the cost of higher education is emerging for both of them because our populations, we continue to study our college students, and college is expensive. So, of course, they're going to be concerned about that. But they have less concerns that they've continued to express about things around money, economy, and jobs, and are much more around human rights and the environment, whereas the men are much more around the economy and jobs and costs of things and personal freedoms.
And the divide doesn't end there. The NBC poll found that Gen Z women are far more likely to feel anxious about the future. As for measures of life success, both groups prioritize financial stability and having a successful career. Yet Gen Z men are more likely to see marriage and family as central to success. What makes this so striking is that it's a complete reversal from the past. Up until the 1980s, young women typically held more conservative views than young men.
In older generation, it was kind of the opposite, right? The men were more liberal on a lot of social issues, and women tend to be, what it used to be, more conservative. That's why a lot of scholars are kind of surprised at why we see this, what we see with Gen Z. We would expect that they become more similar over time, right? Or both of them become more liberal, but somehow that's, at least in some countries, that's not the case.
That's Richard Nensteel, a sociologist and postdoctoral researcher at the University of Bern in Switzerland. He says this isn't just an American trend, it's gaining ground in Europe and Australia too. One theory is that some young men are trying to hold on to power in a world where more young women have a lot of opportunities too.
There are different explanations put forward for this. One is that some men maybe perceive like fear of losing like their status in society. So that's one point put forward by some studies. Another one is that because of educational expansion, it was quite massive in many European countries, and I often think in the US. Young men nowadays, of course, do not only compete with other men that are on average more highly educated, but also with a lot of women that are nowadays very highly educated. And so there might be some sort of backlash towards gender equality, because a lot of them might fear that they lose out, right, when they have to compete with a lot of well-educated women, but of course the relative position gets worse compared to other generations.
Another contributor, social media. Unlike earlier generations, Gen Z has spent most of their lives online. Platforms like Instagram, TikTok, and X make it easy to find like-minded people. The result? Online echo chambers, where the same opinions get louder and louder.
You might be in a group online and all of a sudden, you know, a women's group, and then you get a lot of people sharing very similar thoughts, and you get kind of a more salience or strength in those thoughts, which is really different because that creates much more of a kind of a partisan or even just a divide when you feel more emboldened, right? Like if I'm the only one who's like, I don't know if I want to have kids right away with my partner, and I'm sort of thinking about it, but I get online and I join a group and like, it's like all these women are like, I'm childless and that's what I want to be. All of a sudden, I'm much more emboldened in my choice. And so those differences just become much more stark.
Layer on rising political polarization and the reasons behind the divide become more clear.
I think that we're also living in an era of partisanship and a political partisanship that is more divisive than anything anybody in any living generation has seen before. And this idea of these polarizing differences just shows that people have very different ideas, and the relative unwillingness of people to come together and work together and the incivility that's happening around that is making it so that instead of the idea of like, let's work through our differences, let's capitalize on our differences, let's, you know, collaborate through our differences. Now it's just, I don't like you, you don't like me, you're wrong, I'm right. And that mentality has really shifted over into saying like, there's groups of people who have thoughts about one thing, they may never come to accept that other people have different thoughts. And so that can be a factor that can affect not just Gen Z men and women in their thoughts, but any groups of people that might have differing thoughts. There isn't like the space to come together anymore.
This divisiveness has also led to less romance. Researchers note that Gen Z reports less dating and relationship experience compared to older generations at the same age. Seemler believes Gen Z might move away from traditional ideas of partnership altogether, like getting married or having children.
I think what's going to be really interesting to track are marriage and childbirth rates for the next 10 years of this generation to see to what extent they are keeping pace with other generations. Are they foregoing traditional marriage and actually doing cohabitation or other forms of partnership? Are they having more children, less children? What are their views? And it's kind of hard because, like I said, some of them are still only in high school, so they're not at a point where they'd be making those decisions. But I think following this generation for the next 10 years on those metrics alone can be very interesting.
While Gen Z may be deeply divided today, it doesn't mean that it's set in stone forever. Many in this group are still in high school and are young enough that their views are still forming and changing. For this reason, researchers caution it's too early to draw firm conclusions about an entire generation. To learn more about Corey C. Miller, Richard Nensteel, and all our featured guests, visit viewpointsradio.org. This segment was written and produced by Grace Galante. Our executive producer is Amira Zuveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, what's the top banned book title? Clockwork Orange. We speak with a librarian about her experience during this time of increased book censorship in America when Viewpoints returns.
$5,000. That's the average amount of money people in the U.S. are now spending on gas in a year. $5,000. That's crazy. If you drive, you have to download Upside, the free app that gives you cash back every time you get gas. That's right. You can earn real cash back with Upside just by buying the gas you're already buying. You can literally start earning cash back today.
I use Upside every time I fill up, and I've already made around $200, $300.
You're putting gas in your car anyway. Why not get real cash back? If you like free money, download Upside.
I'm saving the cash I earn from using Upside to help pay for a vacation later this year.
Download the free Upside app now to earn cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code OWN to get an extra 25 cents per gallon on your first tank. You can cash out anytime right to your bank, PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code OWN for a 25 cents per gallon bonus on your first tank. That's code OWN for a 25 cents per gallon bonus.
Behold the Colonel's giant KFC chicken sandwich, a towering extra crispy monument to flavor. Such a huge amount of juicy hand-breaded KFC chicken at a pretty tiny $3.99 price. For the Colonel's KFC chicken sandwich. I mean, $3.99 isn't even worthy of the same epic soundtrack as the KFC chicken sandwich for only $3.99.
The Colonel lived so we could chicken.
Prices and participation vary while supplies last. Taxes, tips, and fees extra.
Progressive's teen driver discount could lower the cost of insurance for your teenager and save you some money. And then you can still spend money on them. Because just when you think you have a grasp on spending, new sneakers! And then it's money for a school field trip. And of course, spending money. Oh yeah, and a new phone to replace the one they dropped in the toilet. Oh, don't remind me. So just get Progressive's teen driver discount. And then you can continue to spend money on them. Endlessly.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discount not available in all states and subject to terms and conditions.
When middle school librarian Amanda Jones opened her email on August 14, 2022, her hands started to shake and she felt short of breath. She had just received a message from a stranger that accused her of being a pedophile and a groomer. It concluded with a threat, quote, "You can't hide, we know where you work and live. Click, click, see you soon." What had Jones done to prompt such language? She had spoken against book banning at a local public library board meeting in Livingston Parish, Louisiana. On the agenda that night was a discussion around banning books with LGBTQ content and prohibiting signage for things like Black History Month and Pride Month. As a librarian herself, Jones was concerned and felt the need to speak up.
I talked about the detriments of book censorship, and I never named a single book. I just was speaking in generalities, and that's all I did. And close to 30 other people also spoke at that same meeting and said pretty much the same thing I did, some of them a lot more heated and with a lot more passion.
In her speech, Jones explained that libraries have diverse collections with resources from many points of view. She told the audience that there was a system in place for parents to challenge books they felt were inappropriate, but that a library's mission is to provide access to information for all users. Even though Jones lives in what she describes as a conservative Louisiana community, she was shocked and heartbroken by what happened next. She's since filed 3 police reports, a defamation lawsuit, and received many death threats. Many of her neighbors have turned on her. Some friends grew distant. She says even her parents couldn't understand her point of view.
And I've been in a lot of therapy since then to try to process, you know, but I'm so used to the hate at this point. It hasn't stopped. It started in July of 2022 and it's still ongoing. It's constant. So I'm used to it now.
Jones writes about her experiences in her book, That Librarian, The Fight Against Book Banning in America. Before becoming a school librarian a decade ago, she taught English language arts to 7th and 8th graders. Jones has seen firsthand the positive impact books can have on students' lives.
I've had multiple students that are now adults who have contacted me to say, I remember I read this book in high school or in college, and I was at the brink. I thought about taking my own life, but I read this book and I stayed another day, and I read another one and I read another one. And even though you didn't recommend that book to me, I developed my love of reading because you taught me in seventh grade and you taught me the importance of books and literature.
Jones says comments like these are especially true for people who identify as LGBTQ, those who have been ostracized by their own communities or their own families and who turn to books for solace.
As a school librarian, I want to make sure I provide a safe place and a safe spot for every student in my school. The Human Rights Coalition in 2023 published a study that said, you know, it was a very large amount of students feel unsafe at school, but 9 out of 10 said they feel the safest in the school library. And to me, that's very important. And it goes to not only the attitudes and the direction and the way a school librarian treats kids, but also the resources that are provided. But again, I'll reiterate, we don't provide resources that are not age relevant to our students. So I would not have books that are sexually explicit in my school library that is 9, 10, and 11-year-olds. A high school might be different, though. In Louisiana, you can get married at the age of 16, but you can't read about sex. It's a little hypocritical.
According to the American Library Association, in the first half of this year, there were more than 400 attempts to censor library materials and services, with more than 1,000 unique titles being challenged across dozens of states. As books about LGBTQ issues, sexual health, and race have been targeted for removal, libraries have been thrust into the spotlight. So far this year, Louisiana legislators have introduced multiple bills that could negatively impact librarians. One of them, HB 777, would have criminalized librarians for using public funds to attend American Library Association conferences.
What I'm seeing is apathy from people. People either are apathetic or they're not paying attention, or, you know, the people not paying attention don't need the books or resources because they tend to have money. But it's going to affect the most vulnerable in our communities, the people who rely on the public library for internet and story times and resources. And if people don't start paying attention, we're going to see the destruction of our libraries and schools.
Even though some of these proposed laws have been killed, Jones says the ripple effect will last decades through soft censorship. According to the American Library Association, soft censorship is when books are purchased by libraries, but then placed in restricted areas, hidden, or kept off limits. Jones says that because of harassment, librarians are scared to even order books that could be deemed even remotely controversial.
My friend Tom, who is the past president of, Tom Bobert, past president of the Missouri Association of School Librarians, he's in a lawsuit right now. He joined with the ACLU to sue Missouri because they'll criminalize librarians if books have sexual content. But what people are equating sexual content could be a handhold or a kiss, but because it's a member, you know, two girls or two, they're saying that's inappropriate. And so people are scared to buy books like Laurie Hall Sanderson's Speak or Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye because they don't want to be put in jail.
Since that initial board meeting 2 years ago, Jones says she has become more introverted. She has had security cameras installed and has started carrying a taser. She says she often gets her groceries delivered and chooses the pharmacy drive-through option to avoid negative interactions. Although she was born and raised in a politically conservative community, Jones explains it is important to her to protect access to books that discuss race or LGBTQ themes.
My parents are ultra-right, and my parents can't wrap their heads around some things that I say and do. And I say, you raised me to be this way because you raised me Southern Baptist Republican. You raised me to believe that God is love. We should love thy neighbor as thyself. We should be good Samaritans. We should champion the underdog, and we should stick up for the First Amendment.
The story of Amanda Jones and other librarians caught in the middle of this censorship battle has been turned into a documentary called The Librarians. The new film, which was released on October 3rd, is currently screening in select theaters in the U.S. and abroad. To learn more about the documentary, head to thelibrariansfilm.com. You can find out more about Amanda Jones and all of our past guests at viewpointsradio.org. This segment originally aired in December of 2024 and was written by producer Polly Hansen. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
$5,000. That's the average amount of money people in the U.S. are now spending on gas in a year. $5,000. That's crazy. If you drive, you have to download Upside, the free app that gives you cash back every time you get gas. That's right. You can earn real cash back with Upside just by buying the gas you're already buying. You can literally start earning cash back today.
I use Upside every time I fill up, and I've already made around $200-$300.
You're putting gas in your car anyway. Why not get real cash back? If you like free money, download Upside.
I'm saving the cash I earn from using Upside to help pay for a vacation later this year.
Download the free Upside app now to earn cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code OWN to get an extra 25 cents per gallon on your first tank. You can cash out anytime right to your bank, PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code OWN for a 25 cents per gallon bonus on your first tank. That's code OWN for a 25 cents per gallon bonus.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. Jane Goodall has passed away at the age of 91. She's best known for devoting her life to the study and protection of chimpanzees and for forever changing the way we see animals. For Goodall, her journey into science was anything but typical. Back then in the 1950s in Europe, it was almost unheard of for a woman to study animals alone in the wild. Science was dominated by men, and the image of a young English woman living in the African forest leading her own research was groundbreaking. She didn't just challenge assumptions about chimpanzees, but questioned gender roles and the assumption that women couldn't be field scientists. Despite the critics, she got her foot in the door and booked a one-way ticket to Tanzania to study chimpanzees under the direction of paleontologist Louise Lackey. Once there, she observed these primates creating makeshift fishing poles to catch termites. This broke the long-held belief that tool-making was unique to humans. Over time, she documented them hugging, playing, and even mourning the death of loved ones. The more she watched, the more it became clear the world between humans and chimpanzees was similar in many ways. Goodall was also well known for her observational approach and unique ability to connect with animals. She gave them names, detailed their personalities, and formed special bonds. This approach shifted how science and the public viewed not just chimpanzees, but wildlife in general. Today, she leaves behind more than just scientific papers and breakthrough discoveries. Her compassion, patience, and connection towards animals changed how we view the natural world and our place within it. That's Viewpoints Explained for this week. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. Leonardo DiCaprio is one of the biggest movie stars to ever live. He proved his dramatic chops immediately with his tender performance in 1993's What's Eating Gilbert Grape, before becoming one of the most charming romantic leads of the 90s with Romeo and Juliet, and of course, Titanic. He's teamed up with many of the greatest living directors for all-timer roles like Billy Costigan in Martin Scorsese's The Departed, and Frank Abagnale Jr. in Steven Spielberg's Catch Me If You Can. He held the center in Christopher Nolan's Inception, turned villain in Quentin Tarantino's Django Unchained, and gave a performance for the ages in Scorsese's The Wolf of Wall Street. He won an Oscar for pushing himself to the physical limit in Alejandro Iñárritu's The Revenant, And then in 2019, he turned in what is one of my favorite performances of all time as Rick Dalton in Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Far from the young charmer of his early career, Dalton forced Leo into new territory. He played an aging actor, full of nervy energy and hectic desperation. In 2023's towering Killers of the Flower Moon, DiCaprio played Ernest Burkhart, a real-life figure as so dumb and confused you'd have to pity him if he weren't also such a malicious force of evil. And this year, DiCaprio stars in the new film from Paul Thomas Anderson called One Battle After Another as Pat Calhoun, aka Bob Ferguson. Calhoun is a revolutionary who turns into Ferguson when all that youthful exuberance leads to tragedy and he's forced into hiding. 16 years later, Ferguson is a burnout loser, trying his best to be a loving father. He's back to the nervy desperation of past roles like Dalton and Costigan, but this time DiCaprio is more aged and weathered than ever before. Gone is the young boy who made America swoon back in 97. In his place is a bona fide character actor, likely the best of his generation. This man once played Jay Gatsby, toasting champagne as fireworks exploded behind him. And now he's Bob Ferguson, a paranoid isolationist stuck in his pajamas as he scrambles to remember secret codes and pounds his chest in defeated frustration. Leo has run the gamut of roles for the past 30-odd years. His personal life has become the stuff of tabloid fodder and social media snark, but every time he shows up on screen, you can't help but be captivated. Always exploring, always relating, and often helping create masterpieces with master directors. I'm Evan Rook.
$5,000. That's the average amount of money people in the U.S. are now spending on gas in a year. $5,000. That's crazy. If you drive, you have to download Upside, the free app that gives you cash back every time you get gas. That's right. You can earn real cash back with Upside just by buying the gas you're already buying. You can literally start earning cash back today.
I use Upside every time I fill up, and I've already made around $200, $300.
You're putting gas in your car anyway. Why not get real cash back? If you like free money, download Upside.
I'm saving the cash I earn from using Upside to help pay for a vacation later this year.
Download the free Upside app now to earn cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code OWN to get an extra 25 cents per gallon on your first tank. You can cash out anytime right to your bank, PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code OWN for a 25 cents per gallon bonus on your first tank. That's code OWN for a 25 cents per gallon bonus.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
I love a day on the water with friends, but my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis sometimes holds me back. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150 milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy.
Teaching music is my passion, but my active psoriatic arthritis can limit me at times. Now I'm treating my joint symptoms with Skyrizi.
With Skyrizi, most people with plaque psoriasis saw 90% clearer skin at 4 months.
Or if you are an adult with active psoriatic arthritis, Skyrizi helps you move with less joint pain, stiffness, swelling, and fatigue.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
There's nothing like clearer skin.
There's nothing like better movement, and that means everything. Nothing is everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Here's a dose of reality. Driving under the influence of prescription painkillers is just as illegal and just as deadly as driving drunk. In fact, there are nearly 2,000 drug-related crashes every year in Wisconsin. Help prevent drug-to-driving and let's achieve zero preventable deaths on Wisconsin roadways. Driving on pills kills. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Departments of Health Services, Transportation, and Justice.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy for today. There could be a stray shower and the wind picks up. Highs in the mid-60s. Occasional showers tonight. A cloudy sky, breezy, low upper 40s. On Monday, sunshine returns. Highs in the low 60s. Right now it's 45.
You're listening to Radio Health Journal, the trusted news source for medicine, science, and technology. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
I'm Mayan Vosta-Betancourt.
And I'm Greg Johnson. This week, a novel treatment for blood cancers.
Not only is it different because it's a cell, but it's also a medicine that is given only once because cells are alive and their job is to fight the cancer.
But first, can an AI therapist actually be helpful?
Our goal is never to reduce human connection that folks have, but I think there are a lot of people out there who are not, either don't have access to a therapist, are afraid to go see a therapist.
All that and more this week on Radio Health Journal.
Whoa, it's you, the Capital One Bank guy.
That's what they call me.
Mind if I get a selfie?
Yeah, sure thing. Say no fees or minimums on your Capital One checking account.
Wow, that's a keeper. So, where are you heading?
I'm off to spread the good news that Capital One helps people keep more money in their wallet with no overdraft fees.
Oh, you're the best Capital One Bank guy.
Hey, mind if I get a selfie?
Sure.
Say, Capital One, what's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. member FDIC.
When you switch to Progressive, you could save bundling your home and auto. Then you could put that money towards some of the surprisingly more expensive things in life.
Attention passengers, we've reached 10,000 feet and internet is now available for purchase.
I just paid hundreds for this flight and you can't even throw in internet? I'll just take the free pretzels.
Sorry, but I do have snack boxes for sale.
I'm just going to sleep.
In that case, we are selling pillows and blankets as well.
I'll just breathe. That's free, right?
Life costs a lot. So bundle and you could save with Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states.
Artificial intelligence has made its way into nearly every field in healthcare. It seemed to be helpful across the board, from aiding in more precise surgeries to fostering better patient-physician relationships. And though many of these advancements have been welcomed with open arms, one area that still seems to have some pushback utilizing AI is therapy. There's a lot of public worry about getting mental health treatment from a computer. But despite these concerns, researchers have been working on the best way to integrate the technology into this field. Dr. Michael Hines is a research psychiatrist at Dartmouth Geisel School of Medicine. He's part of a team dedicated to developing AI therapy tools to help treat mental health disorders. They've been working on a chatbot called Therabot for the last 6 years, trying to make the most effective product for various mental illnesses.
We have over 100 people on this team over the 6 years we've been developing it. So we have a lot of different people who have a lot of different ideas and input. We're currently running trials where we're actually working with what are called sort of experts by experience. So people who are dealing with the conditions that we're interested in treating. And so we're taking input from both kind of experts on our team and from real people with the conditions to try to come up with what content areas are going to be the most helpful, most fruitful.
There are many different types of therapy and approaches to choose from. Hines says that they've mostly trained Therabot on cognitive behavioral therapy, as well as additional techniques that focus on mindfulness, acceptance, and compassion.
So it's really using the treatments that are the most evidence-based that we have in therapy. So it's using also acceptance and commitment therapy is something else we've worked a lot with in developing Therabot. Dialectical behavioral therapy, or DBT, is another one that we've tried to train Therabot on. That one is one that's really skills-based work in DBT that can help folks with, like, in crisis situations, can help them with distress tolerance, can help them with sort of it's very practical. It can help them with sort of interpersonal challenges and things like that.
So far, the team has trained it to work with conditions like depression, anxiety, and personality disorders.
And so we're kind of taking those core concepts that we think are really important. And we've had experts on our team in mental health really review these materials or sort of review the types of therapy we're training Therabot with and figure out kind of what are the best evidence-based practices we can use. So we're using really those kind of core CBT, DBT, ACT, and we're using core principles from those across different disorders.
They conducted the first ever clinical trial of a generative AI therapy chatbot earlier this year, publishing the results in the New England Journal of Medicine AI. The research involved more than 200 adults who either had anxiety, depression, or were at a clinically high risk for eating disorders. Participants were randomly placed into two groups, one that would interact with Therabot and the other that would serve as a control group with no therapy exposure.
What we saw was clinically and statistically significant reductions at 4 weeks in the treatment Therabot group compared to the control group. And we saw that those just got bigger. Those differences actually just got bigger. This was really exciting when we got to the follow-up period at 8 weeks. So that was evidence that these benefits that folks found were actually sustained past the 4 weeks up to 8 weeks.
Hines says most of the participants interacted with Therabot on a daily basis through text messages. The average use was more than 6 hours over the course of the trial. And though the goal is for this technology to be used independently, the team is still monitoring every interaction while it's in the testing phase.
We're only using Therabot still in clinical trial settings. So we still have a human in the loop who's monitoring the interactions. What I will say, though, is Therabot does really well. This isn't something where we're jumping in at any regular frequency. Therabot does really well on its own and works pretty autonomously. But given that we're still testing it, it's still in clinical research, we do have human experts in the loop.
Overall, Therabot users experienced a significant reduction in symptoms over the 8-week trial. And though this is compared to the control group that wasn't receiving any therapy, Hines says that it's a major win, especially when considering that in the real world, many people don't have access to mental health resources.
The magnitude of how much improvement folks had was comparable to many established psychiatric treatments, including in-person therapy that we saw, because it's fairly standard. Many different treatments, when they're first being tested, will be compared to a waitlist control or something, kind of an inactive control, just to get a sense of, is this thing that I'm hoping to deliver to patients at least better than sort of the normal? I guess it really reflects reality. It's when you don't have most people don't have treatment and their symptoms go untreated. And is this thing that we're hoping to test at least better than that? And so we can compare those effect sizes to other treatments that are now standard treatments in the field. And those effect sizes are right on par, if not better, than what we see from both the psychotherapy and medication treatments. So things like SSRIs actually have effect sizes that are, on average, not as good as what we saw in the Therabot trial.
Not only did they have a reduction in symptoms, but the team noticed that the participants experienced secondary effects that are important in therapy, like the patient-therapist relationship. They measured these non-specific outcomes using what's called a working alliance inventory, which is often used in conventional therapy settings.
And so we gave that same inventory to our patients, to our clinical research subjects in the study, and they rated it on par with the way that people have rated alliance with real therapists in an outpatient setting. So we actually saw people really feel that they built an alliance with Therabot. And that alliance is kind of a term for something that's often measured in research, in psychotherapy research, and it looks at factors like shared goals in therapy, feeling a bond with a therapist. And we know that that alliance is something also really important in therapy that predicts outcomes. So people who have a good alliance with their therapist, it might not be surprising, tend to have better outcomes. And so we saw that in the trial as well.
Despite these positive findings, there is still a fear within society of replacing human interactions with AI. What are the repercussions? Will it promote more isolation and reduce human connection? Hines says this worry has been top of mind for him while developing and training Therabot.
I have so many thoughts about this. And I think one goal we have with Therabot is sort of meeting people where they're at. Our goal is never to reduce human connection that folks have, but I think there are a lot of people out there who are not, either don't have access to a therapist, are afraid to go see a therapist, people who may never have access, some people on wait lists, some people who may never have access, depending on where they live or what resources they have. And so I think of Therabot as kind of a way to meet a lot of people where they're at.
It also offers patients a unique space that may help them feel more comfortable than when speaking with a human. In fact, various surveys have estimated that between 70 and 90% of patients lie to their therapist.
A number of people say that they prefer talking about their kind of most personal stories with generative AI because there's not the sort of perceived judgment and stigma that can come when you're talking to a person.
Still, the rise of chatbot companions has created a worry that we will soon have generations dependent on and addicted to AI relationships. Thankfully, Hines says that those artificial connections are the opposite of Therabot's purpose.
We start to have a breakdown of human-human interaction. I think our goal with Therabot is, our guiding star with it is mental health. And mental health means getting back out, for most people, means getting out into the world and engaging with other human beings. And so that's written into the very training data that we're using to train Therabot, is sort of not to engage people indefinitely in their homes in ongoing conversation forever, but it's to meet people where they're at and help them get back into their lives or help them find fulfillment that they're looking for in their lives.
With the success of their first trial, Hines believes that Therabot will be available to the public sooner rather than later. Though they're still testing its safety and efficacy, he's optimistic that it will be used in the real world within a couple of years.
We're moving in directions toward looking at like FDA approval, which I think would open a lot of new doors for Therabot, and actually being able to actually, once you have FDA approval, you can actually make valid claims about treatment. So saying this is actually indicated to treat certain disorders. So I see that. I know both Nick and I see that. Nick is the PI in the AIM High Lab at Dartmouth, who's worked on Therabot. We've worked together for the last 6 years, Nick Jacobson. But I know that's a hope of ours, is to really make this available to everybody and have it be evidence-based and have it be something that can really meet people where they're at and be used for and make substantiated treatment claims that it can help with disorders like depression and anxiety and can actually treat those disorders.
The team will also be expanding Therabot to help other populations, like people with substance use disorders, where 24-hour access to help can make a huge impact. You can find more information about Dr. Michael Hines and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
Coming up, the cancer treatment that's used when patients have exhausted all other options. When Radio Health Journal returns.
At Skechers, comfort is a technology. That's right, it doesn't just happen. You don't just make a shoe and hope it comes out comfortable. It takes research, innovations, compounds, engineering, and so many of the boring things we don't really want to get into. Because it gives us time to talk about the exciting stuff, your comfort. You see, Skechers want you to feel so comfortable you swear you're wearing pillows on your feet. So we have features like Skechers Air-Cooled Memory Foam that molds to your foot and wraps it in luxury. And Skechers has fits like Relax Fit, Stretch Fit, Wide Fit, Arch Fit, and so many more. All comfort technologies that make the shoe feel like it was custom-made just for your foot. Plus, we have hands-free Skechers Slip-ins technology, and this, folks, is a game-changer. This tech allows you to just step into your shoes and put them on. You don't have to bend down and struggle. You don't even have to touch them. That's ultimate convenience and comfort. So you see, comfort is a technology. And nobody, and I mean nobody, does comfort like Skechers. The comfort technology company. Find yours at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever comfortable footwear is sold.
Many of us are familiar with the standard treatments for cancer, like chemotherapy and radiation. And while those are still widely used, scientists have been creating much more personalized forms of care that are, in many cases, much more effective than the usual therapies. One that's been in the works for decades is called chimeric antigen receptor T-cell therapy, more widely known as CAR T-cell therapy. Dr. Michel Sadelin, a pioneer of this research, says it's used to treat some types of blood cancers by teaching the body's immune system to fight off the disease. T cells are white blood cells in your immune system that help kill infected or cancerous cells. What this novel treatment does is it genetically modifies these immune cells to recognize specific molecules unique to the invading cancer so that it can more quickly find and kill the tumor.
They are cells, meaning they are alive. And the starting material comes from the patient himself or herself. So we collect these cells, which is very easily done because we all have immune cells, including T cells, circulating in blood. So you just need to draw some blood to get T cells from the patient. They are then brought to a laboratory where they are processed to acquire this CAR molecule, and then they are reinfused. So not only is it different because it's a cell, but it's also a medicine that is given only once. Because cells are alive, they can divide, they can multiply, they can persist in the body for days, weeks, and even months, and sometimes years. And their job is to fight the cancer.
Sadolin is the director of the Initiative in Cell Engineering and Therapy at Columbia University. He and three other researchers were recently awarded the 2025 Merkin Prize in Biomedical Technology for their roles in pioneering this therapy. Though the treatment was first FDA approved in 2017, Sadolin's been working on CAR T-cell therapy since the 80s when he and other colleagues first developed it.
After obtaining a medical degree and then working at that time on a PhD in immunology, it occurred to me that perhaps we should teach our T-cells to do what we would like those T-cells to do. And for that, it would have to be a genetic order that we insert into those T-cells. So then I had to become a genetic engineer. And so after my PhD in Canada, I went to MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts, to learn what was the beginnings of the science of gene transfer.
Gene transfer refers to the process of passing on genetic information. We do this naturally between parent and child during reproduction, but in medicine, it occurs when scientists modify living cells, then insert them into humans. In Sadolin's case, he used it to see if he could alter T cells to attack specific biomarkers found in cancer.
And once it started succeeding in these cells of the immune system, we could really study these molecules, receptors that you would have to create to reprogram, repurpose, and target these T cells to fight cancers. And thanks to these methods for genetically modifying T cells, we could conduct a number of studies in the laboratory throughout the 90s into the early 2000s.
The team was able to identify a molecule called CD19 that's expressed by various types of leukemia and lymphoma cancers. After years of research, they were able to start testing their first patients in 2007. These patients had refractory leukemia, meaning that the cancer cells had stopped responding to all other treatments.
These therapies are approved once cancers have become resistant to all current or previously known treatments, the so-called refractory disease. So the disease is really bad by then. And in all the first trials that started testing these CAR T cells, those were patients who were going to die from their disease within months or maybe not much more than a year or so. So we're talking about assessing responses in patients who didn't have any hope anymore until the CAR T cells came around.
To this day, CAR T cells still aren't approved to be a first-line defense against cancer. The handful of approved products are still only allowed to be used for relapsed or refractory cancers.
The way new medicines are evaluated in the U.S. is by starting with clinical trials that first enroll patients who have already received existing approved treatments, that's called the standard of care, and who are now failing with these treatments. So by definition, they have already received one or very often multiple treatments, and that means that their disease is also really advanced. So that's the starting point for clinical trials. And therefore, when these CAR T cells were approved, they were approved for those patients.
However, Sadolin believes it's only a matter of time before more patients will be able to utilize this therapy.
But that requires additional clinical studies where you have to compare this treatment to others that are already in use to be certain that it is better to give the treatment earlier. And this is happening, but it takes time.
Time and proof that this treatment is effective. Thankfully, Sadolin says CAR T cell therapy has already been shown to cause significant improvements for certain types of cancer.
The first metric is going into what's called complete remission, which is the cancer becoming undetectable. The doctors try to detect it using a vast different measurements. We don't call that a cure. We call that a complete remission because we know that there's maybe a few cancer cells left. It's just that we can't find them. So then you have to wait for a long time and see if the cancer comes back. So just to give you some examples, in refractory acute lymphoblastic leukemia, about 80% of patients will go into complete remission. And it seems like at least a third and close to half, perhaps, will have at least a very long complete remission. And after years, at that point, you can call it a cure. In forms of lymphoma, the durable complete remissions concerns perhaps even more patients. 60% of those that go into a complete remission may still be disease-free after many years.
Again, this is against a disease that's become completely resistant to chemotherapy and radiation.
Patients have undergone a number of these procedures and received a number of different treatments that no longer worked or perhaps never did work for those patients. A big difference is that the chemotherapy is kind of a poison that kills lots of cells. The goal is to kill cancer cells, but it does have numerous side effects, I think, that most people are familiar with. Whereas these CAR T cells are part of what is called precision medicine. They are targeted like a missile that's targeted to recognize very specifically its target. And so this is why they are so attractive, because they can be efficacious while minimizing side effects.
However, that's not to say that CAR T cell therapy is without any of its own side effects. The treatment can induce severe and life-threatening toxicities like cytokine release syndrome, which happens when the immune system releases too many cytokines into the bloodstream. The treatment can also damage the nervous system and cause confusion, seizures, and paralysis. Rutgers Cancer Institute estimates that up to 90% of patients experience symptoms, but for most, it feels like a bad case of flu and resolves in a week. Within that short time, it's possible that as they're experiencing negative side effects, the therapy is already causing cancer regression.
Meaning there are fewer and fewer cancer cells. Now, how long it takes to eliminate every cancer cell in those instances where it's successful is a bit harder to tell. It may be within a few weeks for some forms of leukemia. We suspect, but we're not sure, that it may take a little longer in some other cancers. There's much more to be learned.
Which isn't a surprising statement, given that Sadolin's been researching this therapy for the last several decades. There's always more tests to run and data to gather, despite his recent award recognition.
The broader public becomes interested in research once it starts reaching a lot of people. We estimate today that about 45,000 and probably more patients have received these cells. So I guess society is starting to take note. But the reality is that the research starts long before, and it starts in research centers, usually in medical schools and in universities. And it takes a while until you think you got it right and you can go to clinical trials, which we had to conduct ourselves at our medical centers. As all recipients of this prize today, my co-recipients, Isabel Riviere, Carl June, and Bruce Levine did. If you were going to bring this to the clinic, you had to do it yourself, because there was no industry at the time that was willing or interested in doing so. So piecing all of this together takes quite a few years.
You can find more information about Dr. Michel Sadolin and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. Our production manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Greg Johnson.
Radio Health Journal returns in just a moment.
Behold the Colonel's giant KFC chicken sandwich, a towering extra crispy monument to flavor. Such a huge amount of juicy hand-breaded KFC chicken at a pretty tiny $3.99 price. For the Colonel's KFC chicken sandwich. I mean, $3.99 isn't even worthy of the same epic soundtrack as the KFC chicken sandwich for only $3.99. The Colonel lived, so we could chicken.
Prices and participation vary while supplies last. Taxes, tips, and fees extra.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
Charmin Ultra Strong. You can use less, better than the rest. Charmin Ultra Strong.
Your booty past the clean test. Yeah.
Salmon wave texture, it's the best.
Come on, study up, teach a lesson on fresh.
Your booty past the clean test.
Yes, sir.
Charmin Ultra Strong.
Charmin Ultra Strong with Diamond Weave Texture cleans better than the leading one-ply brand, so you can use less. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
GMC stands for more than hard work. It's vision, tenacity, fearlessness. When these qualities unite, they build something real, something driven by a higher standard. That's why GMC proudly supports the Southwestern Athletic Conference. Championing HBCU students, alumni, and athletes. Because whether it's on the road or on the field, it's all about performance. GMC, we are professional grade.
Think about it. You take thousands of steps every day. Shouldn't every single one of them feel amazing? Well, with Arch Fit hands-free Skechers slip-ins, they can. Skechers teamed up with podiatrists to design a shoe that provides amazing arch support for all-day comfort. And best of all, you get all this comfort, stability, and support with the ease of Skechers slip-ins technology. Just slip them on. There's no bending down and no struggling to tie your shoes. Just step in and go. Try Arch Fit hands-free Skechers slip-ins at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever comfortable footwear is sold.
Medical notes this week. A test that could save generations of men. Prostate cancer is one of the leading causes of death in American men, and most cases can only be diagnosed after a biopsy. Luckily, new research in the journal eBiomedicine reveals a new urine test that could significantly reduce the need for these procedures. It detects three biomarkers present in prostate tumors and makes an accurate diagnosis even when a blood test comes back normal. Have you gotten your teeth cleaned recently? A new study in the journal Frontiers in Oral Health has revealed that about 1 in 3 adults skipped their dentist appointment in the past year. But it's not just out of laziness. The research reveals that the trend is mostly due to the cost of care and a lack of insurance coverage. These findings suggest that dental care needs to be integrated into overall health care. Have balance issues? It may be your shoes. Difficulty with walking is a top cause of falls, and most solutions involve physical therapy that takes time and money. However, researchers have created a wearable electronic shoe insert that can analyze a user's movement patterns and predict balance issues. It can also pair to other assistive devices to help prevent a fall before an injury occurs. And finally, boredom isn't always a bad thing. A new study in the journal Emotion reveals that feeling bored is actually a psychological signal. It pushes us to seek new experiences that aid in growth, excitement, or just simply create change. The researchers say this evolutionary perspective of boredom helps us understand why people make decisions against their own self-interest. And that's Medical Notes this week. I'm Mayon Vosta Betancourt.
You know that big bargain detergent jug is 80% water, right? It doesn't clean as well.
80% water? I thought I was getting a better deal because it's so big.
If you want a better clean, Tide Pods are only 12% water. The rest is pure, concentrated cleaning ingredients.
Oh, let me make an announcement.
Attention shoppers, if you want a real deal, try Tide Pods.
Stop paying for watered-down detergents. Pay for clean. If it's gotta be clean, it's gotta be Tide Pods. Water content based on the leading bargain liquid detergent.
Progressive presents a testimonial of sorts.
Hey, slow down!
Oh yeah? Well, you drive like my grandma! She's a very attentive and courteous driver who wears a seatbelt and always uses her turn signals. And she's also a talented painter and has very low cholesterol. Not that that has anything to do with her driving, just thought a more complete picture of who she is might be interesting. Anyway, have a nice day!
Safe driver? Get Snapshot from Progressive and get a personalized rate based on how you drive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Snapshot not available in California or from all agents. Surcharge possible for unsafe driving.
Thank you for joining us this week and every week as we break down the science stories you need to know. You can find all of our past segments and guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and X for daily content. And tune in next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.
The right mix for park balls and butternut. This is Trail Mix 103.1.
Not that I want you, not to say, but if you only
That's your